Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the preview show on Football Ramble Daily, sponsored by Betway. My name's Marcus Christopher Speller.
My name is James Edward Campbell.
I'm Luke Aaron Moore.
And I'm Pete Donaldson. I'm going to get you.
Hello, everybody. It's another beautiful day in the neighbourhood. I hope you're keeping well. How are you, Luke Moore?
I'm doing well, thank you. And I've also welcome the reminder that Pete doesn't have a middle name, which to me is a waste of quite an inspirational fella. I mean, his mum and dad could have given him quite an interesting middle name, which would have made him even more of an interesting chap if that were possible. But it didn't happen. So I always feel a little bit sad for Pete when he's the only one of the four of us not to have a middle name.
The problem is, Luke, we'd be in a situation where we'd be at like Luton Airport and I will have filled in the form wrong on the flight and they wouldn't let me in
because I'd miss variables.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to throw any more curveballs at the situation.
Was that why they made that decision? Just for you, helping?
He's probably going to be a fucking idiot. So should we just give him one name?
Yeah, we'll give him a first name that contains five letters, two of which are the same, and just go from there.
Yeah,
this will be an unreliable man who flies a lot. Let's make that easy.
Prescient, very prescient.
Yeah. You maybe a rebrand, Pete, with like a Brazilian football. You just have the one name. It might be easier.
Diggory.
Yeah, I think so.
Indeed, yeah. This is where Diggory came from, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we tried. The authorities rebuffed it, of course. But there we are. There we are. Anyway, gentlemen, speaking of authorities, what about UEFA, eh? They've had a meeting this week. They said that the European Championships that will now take place during the summer of 2021 will still be called Euro 2020. I find that a bit annoying, and so will historians.
Does that mean that we don't have to like age a year while this goes on? Because if the Euros can do it, surely we can all do it. We just don't count this. We all just universally agree to pause time.
Is this because you're coming up to your 40th like me, and that means we can stay 39 for a bit longer?
I'm 37 at the moment, Pete, and that's that's not adjusting for pausing
Infection.
Time. But I have to be completely honest; it's on the horizon, and that's exactly why I'm thinking this.
Jim, you've been 37. Idea. Jim, you've been 37 for 5 years now. Yeah. About time you
owned
up to
it. It's like that Cortina song.
It's like Jerry Halliwell.
Yeah. Don't leave Halliwell alone.
But I assumed that. I mean, speaking on as someone who is going to be 40 before anyone else on this show, I'm all in favour of the kind of pausing for a year. That works very, very well for me. But I was assuming that the reason they've decided to do this is because it's been postponed so late that they've got a load of merch and branding and everything that they've probably paid through the nose for that they still want to sell, and they can't just get a million marker pens and just put a one over the zero.
That is absolutely it. Every time we see Euro 2020, and it will be everywhere next summer, if indeed it does go ahead bloody in the summer of 2021 the way this is going, everyone will just... We will be constantly, I suppose, bemused by that.
There'll be a lot of signs that are getting vandalised. I walked down the street this morning and some enterprising Twitter account owner had written an inspirational message in whiteout paint on the front of a disused shopfront saying, during the lockdown, make every day count. Obviously, a put-upon parent had rubbed out the "or" in the count, so he got a very different word. And I respect that kind of graffito artist kind of aesthetic. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of people with marker pens just crossing out the zero and thinking they are the first person to ever do it.
Yeah, or perhaps if they're a little more subtly creative, they'll put quotation marks around 2020. But I sort of, I do quite like the idea that that sort of slight show of defiance there. The idea that, you know, this was going to be Euro 2020. We're just doing it in 2021. Damn you, coronavirus. Mm. Damn you to hell.
Mm. Well, UEFA didn't just talk about that, of course. They did talk about qualification for the Champions League and the Europa League, for next season. And it must be based on sporting merit. That's what they say. That's the takeaway, sporting merit. So each league and association will have the power to determine how that is interpreted if the season is unable to be finished.
I absolutely love that. They've effectively just sat down and gone, yeah, you lot can sort that out. Yeah, we'll delegate that to everyone else. This is too complicated. And I also like the use of the term merit as well, because a merit can just be awarded, can't it? You can set the parameters of that yourself, very much so. So they've cleverly washed their hands of a really, really complicated situation there, UEFA.
They very much have. Well, they're effectively removing the option to null and void the season off the table. Mm. Other options, such as playing small playoff systems, that kind of thing, could come into play. Although I think that might, again, no solution seems decent at the moment. But UEFA have stated that if a league finishes without government decree or economic problems, then clubs from that league could be barred from next season's European competitions. Luke, wow. They're getting serious.
Yeah, I think they're trying to guard against this null and void option because it's the most difficult for them logistically, isn't it? And as we said on the continent yesterday with Andy, and if you haven't listened to that, go back and give it a listen, because crucially, we recorded that about 20 minutes before this news broke, so that's always helpful. They're at the mercy of the authorities, and I think a bit later on, maybe we'll talk about what's happening in Netherlands, and Netherlands have now got no choice but to look at a different option, because the Prime Minister has essentially banned professional sport until later in the year. So, but then some of the bigger leagues are very, very reluctant to have to go down that path. So there's been talk now, hasn't there, that it'll be settled on maybe a points per game basis or whatever that may be. So, everyone is working within the parameters that have been passed down from their governmental authorities. And the other thing that's really interesting, actually, I think, is that there are some countries that are much further along in being able to look at bringing the sport, bringing football back than others. So it's not going to necessarily be possible for UEFA to have a one-size-fits-no-one approach. They're going to have to come up with something between them. But what's important is that it happens in a way that suits each country and also gives them eligible clubs for next season's European competition, whenever that may be, because if it's completely null and voided, it becomes very, very unbalanced.
Well, it does, yeah. I mean, you mentioned there about the Dutch FA planning to bin off the season because obviously professional sport will be banned until September. But the big news for mainland Europe, which of course you covered on the continent, is that the Bundesliga says it's ready to resume on the 9th of May if the German government gives the green light, which, of course, at the time of recording, there has been no update on that story. But that would be pretty remarkable if they got things going. But obviously, you discussed that there. I can't help but think that if UEFA really, really wants some sort of sporting merit, they should take a leaf out of, and we often go back to MLS and NASL and all that kind of stuff. We were given a tweet the other day. Someone sent us a tweet who quite wonderfully pointed out that they used to have sort of goalkeeper-style penalty shootouts where opposing goalkeepers would stand. I don't know how far apart it would be. Sort of 20,
this is incredible,
yards.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's I don't know, say 30 yards. It's not that far apart. And they can either drop kick or throw the ball into the opposing goalkeeper's net. So they're socially distanced. Okay, it's something a bit different, because it was penalty shootouts. People might think, oh, but that's, we've seen that. No, that's deciding big matches in or knockout games and so on. This, totally different. Goalkeeper, penalty shootout thing. We tweeted this as well. Do check it out, because it's phenomenal.
Oh, it's a beautiful piece of work.
I thought it was just goalkeepers flinging the ball at each other from like 20 yards. I didn't know it was an actual competition.
Yeah, it's like a sort of penalty shootout at each other. But what I don't understand is that they don't seem to... they've got the option of drop kicking or basically throwing. Yeah. One of the commentators pointing out very clearly that the brother of the goalkeeper who was throwing the ball at the other person's net, his brother is a baseball pitcher, so he's probably got incredible delivery skills. But just blooming drop kick it, for crying out loud. You're about 10 yards away from the goal, just absolutely leathering.
I just watched it thinking, why is any of this happening?
I mean, that is a very fair question, Luke. But I suppose once you've seen a bit of it, you just kind of get carried away and caught up with it, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I quite enjoyed it. I think there's probably something quite humiliating as a goalkeeper getting beaten by another goalkeeper's throw, but they both seemed intent on doing it that way. Maybe it looked like relatively early 90s American soccer, so maybe they were just desperate to play any other sport.
Yeah. You could do it in like a Faraday cage, like an electrified Faraday cage, and just kind of get a bit of like WrestleMania in there as well. I'm into ending the season like that, just having people taking absolute howitzers at each other's goals.
it's some kind of sporting merit, isn't it? It avoids the null and void.
Because this is what it's come to.
Yeah, but it has, Luke.
UEFA are effectively just sort of doing what the American government has just gone, just go state by state and just fight among yourselves. Fight for the resources that you've got, sort yourselves out, and we'll see what happens at the end.
Yeah. Liberate La Liga. Liberate the Bundesliga.
Make Serie A great again. Well, it's creeping up the football pyramid in England, this idea of sort of calling the season as it is. We should have seen that in Scotland. But National League clubs in England have decided to end the season at its current point, cancel all remaining fixtures. 90% of clubs voted in favour of this. Then the National League board will decide on the feasibility of continuing to hold the playoffs to decide the promotion from each of its three divisions, but there's no timescale for this, and they will seek help and assistance, of course, from clubs in making the final decisions. And they'll also discuss all these possibilities with the Football League, because it could affect the Football League going up and down. I just think that UEFA are seeing countries, we've seen, let's say, Belgium, the Dutch look as though they're going to go that way as well. People are just going, we can't do it. Other than the Bundesliga, it seems that everyone's just going, yeah, it just can't be done. And UEFA are crapping themselves thinking, well, hang on, how do we sort out the qualification for the Champions League and the Europa League? And it is such a headache. I've no idea, other than this goalkeeper penalty shootout thing, which seems...
Marcus, does this mean that Barrow at the top of the National League will be automatically promoted to the Football League then?
No, I don't think it will, because they'll need the Football League's consensus, won't they? You can't just say Football League, here you go, there's another club up there, because it's the Football League.
We've got so we have to wait and see, basically. They have to basically, because the reason I asked that is because the Barrow manager was lobbying quite hard on the BBC yesterday, saying that it would be, at this point, it would be really unfair for Barrow not to be promoted. Now, I understand why you would say that, but I didn't think, actually, it's pretty obvious, isn't it, that they need to work out what's happening with League Two first.
Yeah.
Because a team falling out of League Two, out of the Football League, on a not altogether fair basis, would be pretty scandalous in a season of scandal based on what's happening. I know it's not going to be fair for everyone, and it's going to be very, very difficult for a lot of clubs, but it's hard to think of something more disastrous than dropping out the Football League, really. And for that to happen in an incomplete season would be kind of pretty full on, wouldn't it?
And also, if you think a lot of the reasons why a lot of teams didn't get promoted in the 90s into the league was because their grounds weren't good enough. Remember that sort of situation? Obviously, the few people you do see out in the streets are builders. So by the time the season starts up again, they could have built a super stadium. We don't know.
50,000 seater.
Like that big lasagna.
Like that big lasagna. Or Darlington FC's £20,000 mega stadium. That is just...
£20,000? Must be rubbish.
That seems pretty good.
Oh, dearie me. Are we ready to talk about Newcastle United again?
Always.
Are we ever? Are we ever?
I think, Marcus, it very much depends on who individually you ask on the show.
Well, it's a strange situation, because normally when we talk about a takeover bid, as soon as we've mentioned it, it's gone. Whereas this one's sort of hanging around a bit longer. So I'm not quite sure. To the point of Qatari broadcaster BeIN Sport are trying to get the Premier League to stop the proposed sale of Newcastle United to Amanda Staveley and the Saudis, of course. Even Richard Keys came out and said it's not right.
So weird.
Yeah, but notable Qatari supporting organ Richard Keys. I mean, he's essentially hitched his wagon to Qatar as soon as he knew the 2022 Qatari World Cup was going to happen, and obviously before, when he was bombed out in disgrace from the UK, and now everything Qatar does is amazing, according to Richard. Yeah. And if his paymasters at BN Sport want something done, he is very much the figurehead for that. He's very much the chemical Ali, isn't he? Well, of Qatari broadcasting.
Wonderfully described by Marina Hyde in The Guardian as Lord Haw Haw, for those who get that reference.
Yeah, he is. He is. Yeah. And so it is. It is. I wouldn't be surprised if he's got a single line telephone into his home, which he just answers when it rings, and it says, "Can you please now just say this?"
He does have a telephone box in there. Remember when we
yeah,
got
he does,
a,
yeah.
A little sort of walk around his house in Qatar, and he said it was to remind him of home. And then he said, "Is this? I mean, I don't know. Is that home or is here home? I'm not sure anymore."
Yeah. As well as the whole, fierce loyalty to his paymasters in Qatar thing, he also hates Newcastle. So, I mean, this is a real perfect storm for Richard, isn't it?
Yeah. Although he did say, oh, not that club, any other club, but not that club or something.
Does he hate Newcastle? What is the reason for that?
I can't remember the original reason. I think it was around one of the previous three or four takeovers. I think he just kind of gives it the big licks about Mike Ashley. Newcastle fans should be really happy that Mike Ashley is at the helm because he's always supported the club financially. All that good stuff. And of course, he gets pelters.
I assumed it was also because he had some kind of running with Rafa Benitez back in the day when he was working at Sky. Yeah, and Rafa Benitez was sort of banging the drum and PRing himself quite effectively to Newcastle United fans. And obviously you can make your own conclusions on that. And so therefore Richard, in this binary world of good and evil in which he lives, had to then side with everyone against Rafa, which then meant the Newcastle fans turned on him, which now means he hates Newcastle. That's the mathematics I'm doing in my mind.
Mm. Yeah, imagine the kind of room full of lasers in front of a safe kind of contortions Richard Keys is having to get through when it comes to living life in a binary good and evil kind of world, depending on what he gets up to in his life.
Yeah, if you look at his Twitter, he's always saying that, you know, he's never seen any of this stuff. So, what's the fuss all about?
He's never seen any of this stuff that he's done personally to other people.
Yeah, well, we have to take him on his word, don't we? Yeah. Richard's not seen it.
Do we?
If Richard's not seen it, then I believe that he hasn't seen it. Whether it's going on or not,
I do like the fact that proposed takeover breaks down, it is not because Amnesty International has sent letters, it's because BN Sport and Richard Keys have headed a dirty tricks campaign to see off the investors. But it does make me giggle that like an entire country just pirating somebody else's right. And to be honest, Richard, if you are listening, have a look at my internet history because I've watched you way too many times than I care to mention, and I didn't want to. I was forced into it. All right, so
yeah,
get stuffed. And
the thing as well is like they have a satellite, don't they, the Saudis, to do this thing, and it's called Be Out Sport. They are it's an admirable level to which they're taking the piss.
Mm. Don't get involved, Premier League. Oh, you already have.
Well, the thing is, on a serious note, is that as we mentioned on the last show, Sheffield United have Saudi owners, don't they? Or I'm not sure the exact details of it, but they're at least heavily involved. So presumably this is not going to go anywhere as there's precedent.
Yeah, but Jim, the horse has already bolted, as we've already said. You know, anyway. But staying with Newcastle United, a paragraph I read in the press this week said this: Newcastle boss Steve Bruce is set to be given until the end of the season, whenever that may be, at least to prove he is the right manager to guide the club to European football. He's buggered, isn't he?
Yeah. 9 games of the season left and the season's been paused. But good luck, Steve.
I think it might be mathematically impossible. Yeah.
Yeah. Steve, do you want to just let us know what you would have done?
Yeah.
And we'll judge it on its merits, mate.
Because, Steve, if I remember rightly, we didn't even have that many injuries so, at the point in which the season paused. Oh. So, not important ones anyway. I've got this new lad, Joe Linton. He is going to be a dynamo in the 6-yard box.
I like the idea that there's a new regime potentially coming in, and most people will be sat there thinking, oh, you know, I wonder what it's going to be like. I wonder what the changes are going to be like at the place I work. Yeah. Steve Bruce is sitting there thinking, well, I already know I'm going to be fired. So he probably doesn't even want football to come back. It'd be Newcastle's longest serving manager if this keeps up.
Indeed, yeah. Former Newcastle defender Warren Barton believes the club should go after Maurizio Pochettino should the takeover happen. I mean, I get the impression now for Steve Bruce that it wouldn't surprise me if Warren Barton said that while he was sat next to Steve Bruce.
Yeah.
Warren Barton is underratedly terrifying.
Really?
He looks like the kind of bloke who, when you're growing up on your street, would literally, if your football went over into his back garden, he would come out with a knife and stab the ball and pop it.
I really? Know what you mean.
Look, honestly, Google image him. It's exactly what he looks like.
I think the name's quite scary in a sort of slight Patrick Bateman way. Warren Barton sounds like a very important, very moneyed man who might stop at nothing to get what he wants.
I think you're absolutely right there, Jim. He looks terrifying in that sort of American psycho type of businessman kind of way, in which you think
I think he looks like a properly lost it PE teacher.
I mean his name.
There's often crossover between
this
those
at
two.
All.
No,
I don't see.
You're thinking
this
of
all.
His beautiful blonde locks when he played.
I am. I
his
mean,
curtains.
He played. He played for Wimbledon at some literally crazy times. So, like maybe there's that menace about him. You know, he's probably gone through a lot. And you know, he played for Wimbledon twice, in fact. So it's kind of, and then he just moved to America wholesale, and he's, I think he's been there ever since, hasn't he? So he's, I think he's mellowed out a little bit. Bit of sunshine, bit of core comms, lovely old job.
Yeah, get off his back, Luke, or he'll stab you.
Sorry, Warren.
Well, gentlemen, I'd like to bring Michael O'Neill to your attention. He's left his post as Northern Ireland manager to solely focus on Stoke City. He was in charge for 8 years of Northern Ireland. He was due to see out the Euro 2020 qualification process and possibly the tournament, of course, if Northern Ireland had got there. They're in a playoff against Bosnia-Herzegovina. Could even play Ireland in the final of that playoff. It's a bit of a shame, this. Obviously, it's a minor footnote in football at the moment, but a bit of a shame. Obviously, the same happened to big Mick McCarthy. Now, that was a shame in terms of content, but I feel this is a bit of a shame for Michael O'Neill, because when he took over, I think Northern Ireland was something like 127th in the world or something like that, and now they're about 45th in the FIFA rankings. Now, you may not give too much credence for the rankings, but still, I think that much of a jump is quite something. He got them to the Euros in 2016 as well, on merit. That wasn't just a generous, people saying, oh, it's an expanded tournament, so on. They did get there fair and square. So, yeah, a bit of a shame for Michael O'Neill, I thought.
Yeah. One of the things interesting about the race, if it is a race, and let's be honest, nothing's happening, so it's probably a very slow race at the moment to replace him, is that I saw that David Healy's on the shortlist, apparently, has just been quietly going. He's only 40. He's been quietly going about winning two titles at Linfield as a coach since he retired. And there's talk that he might be favoured to take over the job, which is interesting to me because despite doing a football podcast and some football broadcasting for now 13 years, I've never heard of any of the other candidates. Which says more about me, probably. I concede that. But nonetheless, that's the case.
I think Stephen Robinson is a candidate when I was reading the story. He's currently manager of Motherwell. He manages the Well. And he played, I'm just looking at his Wikipedia page now. I hold my hands up. But he played for Bournemouth for a while. But he have a few caps for Northern Ireland. His son, Harry, is also a footballer. So, I know a little bit more about him now.
Jim Mark has actually, haven't said what I've just said. Jim the Jilton, I think, might be linked as well, actually.
Now you're talking.
Who I've obviously heard of.
I'd like Big Jerry Taggart. It would be an absolute...
Oh, what, because beautiful... you worked with him once 10 years ago? Where? Pathetic.
It wasn't 10 years ago.
That makes you sound less pathetic, Marcus.
It would be a beautiful disaster. He's a delightful chap. But talking of beautiful chaps, David Moyes, have you heard about this? He's been delivering fruit and veg to his local elderly residents in the village he lives in Lancashire. Isn't that lovely? Jim, you're
it's
a fan
brilliant.
Of David Moyes.
I'm an absolute fan of the fact that the ferryman is ferrying shopping around for old people.
Can I just say, Can I just say, if you're worried for your future as an old person in a coronavirus world, the last person you want walking up your drive is David fucking Moyes.
Why?
Because you think, well, that's the Grim Reaper. I'm done.
Yeah, I'm finished.
He's not the Grim Reaper. He's the ferryman. Or is the ferryman the Grim Reaper? I've never experienced
that. Look at that
either.
Ginger skull is what you'd think. It's coming for me. Is that hair or flames? Either way, I have had it. I have had it. Why has he got a fruit basket? That seems a bit crass. A bit
seems
sarcastic.
Sympathetic. That's even worse.
Yeah, exactly. Give me death presents.
Is that the motorbike from Ghost Rider delivering the vegetables?
Oh, he's Ghost Rider, isn't he?
You can imagine it a week in. Sorry, David, can we have a quick word? Yeah, it's not really working. I mean, Everyone's terrified.
Have you read the circumstances of it? I've got some quotes here from David Moyes, from the Ghost Rider himself. It's amazing. So he says, when the coronavirus first hit here, I was in a fruit and veg shop in the village. There was a thing up in the window that drivers were needed. So I volunteered, as my wife was away at the time and I was on my own. All I was doing was dropping it at the door, knocking and then going away. It was beautiful big boxes of fruit and veg. I thought, this is great. I was really enjoying it. Going back to the shop to get another lot and then filling the car up. It gives the impression that he felt you had to drop everything you were doing and just start a new life on the spot. Like when the lockdown came into play. And he's really gone for it. And he genuinely sounds happier delivering shopping to old people in a pandemic than he does managing West Ham.
Yes.
Well, he sounds very much like that's probably, I didn't watch a lot of David Moyes back in the day, but it kind of sounds like that's how he played football. And also like the idea of him dropping vegetables at the door and fruit and running and basically running away. It's literal knockdown ginger.
Lockdown ginger.
You
could say that, Jim.
Love that.
I like it. And I think, I just hope he doesn't get sacked from this job. That's all I'm hoping.
No, what we should say, I mean, we should probably be a bit balanced and say it's a really nice thing that he's doing. Yeah, we talked about Mourinho doing it a few weeks ago, didn't we, as well? I mean, it's a nice gesture. It's not something obviously he has to do. So he's obviously, he's either volunteered or he's been asked and he's agreed. Good on him, because he's doing more than lots of people are doing. So we shouldn't probably just hammer him. We should say at least acknowledge that he's doing quite a nice thing.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go for a quick break, after which there's some very exciting Patreon news. Stay tuned for that. Welcome back to the preview show on Football Ramble Daily, sponsored by Betway. Thanks for staying tuned to your podcast. Luke, what on earth is going on at the Patreon?
It's very exciting news. So for those of you who are used to hearing the Patreon message after the ad break, do not skip. Do not skip this one. You will not want to skip it. There's a reminder that you can sign up and support us on Patreon. And you know all about that. You'll receive behind the scenes content and bonus episodes for as little as $5 a month. It will also help keep all our shows running through this difficult period. And we really appreciate your support. So that's point number one. Thank you, thank you, thank you. But if you're yet to sign up, then do listen carefully to this. Thanks to the good people at Toshiba, you can win a brand new TV just by signing up to our Patreon. Yes, Toshiba will give away a smart 4K HDR TV with FreeView Play to each of our three lucky Patreon subscribers. Ooh. So three of you who have signed up to the Patreon could win a TV. Simply sign up at patreon.com/footballrambledaily by 5 a.m. UK time, this Monday, the 27th of April, by 5 a.m. British Summer Time, this Monday. Everyone signed up before the deadline, including those of you who are already Patreon subscribers, will be eligible for the prize. Signing up to a higher tier also makes you more likely to win. So if you sign up to our Supporters Club tier, you'll be entered once into the competition. But if you sign up to our Ramble On tier, the one above, you will be entered twice into the competition. And if you sign up for our highest tier, as well as becoming an official friend of the Ramble, which is an amazing thing in and of itself, your name will be entered three times into the competition. The higher the tier, the more chance you've got to win. Three of you will win a wicked Toshiba Smart 4K HDR TV with FreeView Play. We'll announce that on Monday's episode of The Ramble. So head to patreon.com/footballrambledaily by 5 a.m. on Monday to enter, and we'll announce the winners on that Monday's episode of The Ramble. So good luck. Thanks very much for your support, and we'll talk to you about it with some amazing prizes on Monday. And this is a competition for UK residents only. You must be a resident in the UK to be eligible for a prize.
Flipping fantastic. Right, ladies and gentlemen, it's now time for emails with PDD.
It is time for emails with PDD, but before we go to the jingle, I've got an email from Marcos Castillo. Hello, lads. Hope you're all keeping well and safe in these somewhat bleak times. I hope I brought you something uplifting. A cute little girl singing the world's greatest jingle created for under £251. I've been a listener since 2013, and like many other listeners, was caught belting out Pete's masterpiece at home as it gets in my head and refuses to leave. My daughter Pepe picked up on it and insisted I played the jingle to her over and over. And over. So here's her rendition for everyone to enjoy. No pressure, but I'm sure hearing it playing on the show will go some way to soothing the ache of having her beloved Liverpool FC delayed from winning the title. She's four, Marcos. She's four, for crying out loud. Don't subject her to the pain of football just yet. But this is what she sounds like.
To email show at footballrambledaily.com, and now Pete is reading it out. Well done.
Amazing.
Amazing. That is amazing.
That's lovely. It's good, isn't it? So thank you very much to Marcos Castillo de Araujo
so
and Pepe as well.
You email show at footballrambledaily.com, and now Pete is reading it out. Well done.
Hello to Connor Malloy. Do any of our number watch the TV show It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia? I've flirted with it, but I can't get on with it.
I've never seen it.
Right, Jim.
No, neither have I don't love it. I know a lot of people do. Call it It's Not That Funny in Philadelphia to annoy people, which generally works.
Hello, BoJack Horseman fan. Well, Connor's got in touch from Minneapolis, not Philly, where all people are dirt trash, he says. What is the Philly of England, he wants to know. We'll figure that one out a little bit later on. Hello, Ramblers. In these COVID times, the man gets to wondering, and I was struck by how similar the members of the Ramble are to the main characters from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And you'll see why I've read this one out. Luke is like Mac, brash, full of himself, even though no one takes him seriously. Marcus is like Dennis. He thinks he's smooth, but his idea of smooth is actually just modelled off an old venal pervert. Pete is just like Charlie. Pete is just like Charlie, runty and constantly teased by the other three members of the group, but everyone in the audience has him as their favourite. And Jim is not actually that much like Dee, so that's where the theory starts to break down. However, they are both tall, gangly and prone to harm themselves through unbelievably consistent pratfalls. I'm back on board at that point, to be quite frank. I have flirted with TV show. Yeah, I think it's fair. Craig Evans has got in touch. Hi all. Pete's Film Club did remind me of the audiovisual monstrosity that was Goal 3, one of the most godforsaken piece of shit ever created in any medium. There are two small bits that you might like. I mean, we might, depending on how long this lockdown goes through, we may get to the third of the amazing series that is Goal. But there is a cameo by Newcastle United's own Mike Ashley in Goal 3. And he's not wearing it, but someone is wearing a half and half Newcastle/England away shirt. It really is something else in the background. A Northern Rock, Newcastle United. Yeah, he'd have a go, I reckon, if he could get the rights from Umbro. So you got a Northern Rock Newcastle shirt mixed with a classic red England shirt. You hate to see it, and you hate to see it in the film Goal 3. Please do yourself a favour and don't watch this film out of curiosity if you haven't already seen it, says Craig. It's free on YouTube, but I'd still feel ripped off if I watched it.
Why do I feel like you're setting us up to watch this, Pete?
Well, I've not even seen the film Watch on Monday yet with Pelle, so we'll see how that one pans out. We might actually end the feature on that. Tom, hiya, folks. At the last count, Captain Tom Moore has raised more than 28 million for NHS charities. A fine effort, like a ridiculous amount of money. Yeah. He's like a one-man comic relief with a wall.
Yeah, it's mad.
Incredible. But with loads of footballers currently kicking their heels without any games to play, instead of spending this money sensibly, I reckon that morale could be boosted by making one marquee signing to help the UK's healthcare effort. What current footballer would you buy for 28 million? Tom, I think I speak for everyone in the country when I say I think you're the worst person in the world. But I'm so glad you listened to the Football Ramble. Thank you so much.
And I'm so glad that, Pete, you didn't actually come to me first and say, Luke, which player would you buy?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Luke, what footballer would you buy for 28 million?
I think that's morally abhorrent and I will not entertain it.
Oh, terrible. If you want to get in touch with the show, short@footballrambledaily.com. I enjoyed those emails and I hope you did too. Bye-bye.
Right, everybody. It's now time for Time Tunnel.
Ooh, that's exciting.
It is this week's
Who
time
chose
tunnel.
This one?
It was Jim Campbell.
Nice one, Jim.
Yeah, it was. It's the episode that's called Flower versus Bee. It's from 2015, isn't it? It's September 14th, 2015, I believe. And this, again, through happy accident, because it seems so much happens in football. Every single time you go back to an episode, you're like, oh, I remember that, as if it was a huge thing. But this is the show just after Tim Sherwood's Aston Villa had been 2-0 up against Leicester and ended up losing 3-2. And in my favourite post-match interview in all of football, that he's just absolutely crestfallen. I think it might be Steve Parry who asked him how he's feeling. And he just sort of looks completely dead-eyed into the middle distance and says, I ain't never felt this bad ever.
it's honestly amazing. Jim, like you say that about the post-match interview, and everyone can grab their personal favourites from wisecracks and the things that, you know, Ferguson said and Benitez has said, and
Keegan.
You know, the fact thing Benitez did and the Mourinho stuff, but this is, if you want a properly realised set of emotions just temporarily in a human host, right, look at this interview. It's available on the BBC website, straight after the defeat. And he does an amazing combination, Tim Sherwood, of sort of naughty school child that's been caught doing something he shouldn't do, quite chippy adolescent, quite stupid adult. All of it is together in one sort of 3-minute interview. It is incredible to rewatch. I rewatched it this morning and I immediately went onto the WhatsApp group and said, guys, you've got to watch this back. It's so funny.
The thing that makes me laugh is that the date is 14th of September 2015. We're a month into the season and Tim Sherwood's having a breakdown. I'm just very
Yeah. I felt a bit sorry for Tim Sherwood watching it back, actually. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but at the same time, because you can't help but see a man who's really having a rough time, and that's always a difficult thing to watch in any situation, isn't it, if you've got a heart. But at the same time, it's incredibly unprofessional. Displays a real lack of I suppose, intelligence in the face of adversity.
I think I don't feel sorry for him chiefly because he's a powerful, you know, by most people's measure, in the grand scheme of the whole ecosystem of football, successful guy. And he bluffed his way into a series of positions and wrote a lot of checks that he couldn't cash. And, you know, he lost his job, but I mean, he's treated pretty well financially as far as I remember. He spends a lot of his time on the media chipping off about other football players and other football managers, as do I. So I've got no particular issue with that. I mean, it's only a guy standing there upset like a spoiled brat because he lost a football match. I mean, I don't have sympathy for him at all, really.
A spoiled brat is a bit harsh.
But he'd never felt this bad ever.
Well, actually, put it into context. If he had said, I've not felt this bad since I didn't get the present I wanted for my 14th birthday, that's one thing. The fact that he hasn't ever felt this bad ever, fair enough. I'll row back a bit and say I do feel a bit sorry for him, because that is quite the measure.
I'd like an update on whether he's felt worse since, because obviously that was 5 years ago. I mean, a lot can happen in that time. Life moves on.
It does.
Life does. Do you remember, though, the game itself? Leicester were 2-0 down at home to Sherwood's Aston Villa and came roaring back to win 3-2. And it was sort of plucky little Leicester having survived the previous season. And they did this a few times, this kind of comeback thing early on that season. And then obviously went on to win the league.
It's amazing. Yeah.
It is incredible, isn't it? Especially to listen back to a little slice of that season where we barely really spoke about Leicester because it was so early on. It was, you know, mid-September, obviously. And it's so brilliant to hear us unaware of this seismic thing that's about to happen.
Yeah.
We're unaware of most things, to be fair.
Yeah, it is. It's fair.
Yeah, but the reason why we didn't listen, the reason why we weren't talking that much about Leicester at the time is because Louis van Gaal's Manchester United were beating Brendan Rodgers' Liverpool, and Jose Mourinho's Chelsea were having a bit of a meltdown themselves. And Jose Mourinho was annoyed with Roberto Martinez that weekend, whose Everton side beat them, because Martinez went first in the post-match press conference, which meant the Chelsea bus had to wait around for Jose Mourinho, who should have been first. Nothing to do with annoyed about the 3-1 loss or anything like that. And also, Manuel Pellegrini and Alan Pardew had a bit of a set to as well. So this is why Leicester were a little bit lower down the pecking order at the time.
Yeah, a lot happened. And the Pards versus Pellegrini, it was the second one, wasn't it? Because we were saying that Pardew behaved himself a lot more this time, because at the time we suspected he was trying to get the England job. And Marcus, you tipped Sam Allardyce to replace him at Palace.
Oh, Mr. Schmeck.
I believe happened. Yeah. And also, we were talking about John Stones from that Chelsea game, where Stephen Naismith scored a hat-trick for Everton against Chelsea off the bench, a perfect hat-trick as well. Another time, I say that John Stones looks like a big game player, like a young Rio Ferdinand, and it's mentioned that he did a Cruyff turn in the box. And Luke said, I look forward to that costing us in a knockout game in a major tournament. So, I mean, the Still Nations League didn't exist at the time, but, you know, there's an argument there.
But by the way, I admire your guys' ability to listen back through these shows, chiefly because within about 2 minutes of doing it, I just think to myself, God, we didn't know how good we had it. We did not know how good we had it. And that's I am absolutely bereft here.
Do you remember in the running order, we had to drop games because there was just so much going on?
Yeah. Oh, they were. I mean, but one thing is for certain, that whenever we go back to one of these shows, doesn't matter in which part of Ramble history, Ronaldo or Messi have done something amazing. So last time I think we mentioned Messi had got his 300th Barcelona goal or something like that. In this podcast, Ronaldo scored a glut for Real Madrid and became the club's top scorer of all time in La Liga. They're just everywhere. These records, absolutely incredible. It was quite a nice story as well, just to perhaps finish, unless anybody's got any more to say, that in Mexico, if you remember, now this happened a while before the recording of that particular episode, but the former Mexico player Blanco won the election for the position of mayor in the town of Cuernavaca, which I think is his where he's from. But it emerged around the time of when we recorded that podcast in September 2015 that instead of submitting a CV for the job, he just copy and pasted his Wikipedia page.
It's kind of like a CV, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Brilliant.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's now time for the Masked Winger.
Who's under there, under the mask? Let's see if we can figure it out. Who's under there, under the mask? Let's see if we can figure it out. It's the Masked Winger.
We're going to figure it out. It's the Masked Winger, the mystery footballer, where I impart a few key clues written by one of you guys. If you want to get involved, it's glold@footballrambledaily.com. That's glold@footballrambledaily.com.
Pete, is he actually a winger this week?
He is actually a winger this week. So shut your noise, Mark Busby. Said hello, and he's come up with the clues this time around. He's actually a winger. The first clue is: I was born on the 20th of December, 1980.
Luke,
yours.
I want to go Matthew Etherington.
Nice.
Ooh. It's not Matthew Etherington, but I don't think he's ever been mentioned on Glold or the Masked Winger. Ooh. So it's very enjoyable. Ooh. I was born in a country that no longer exists.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. Think about which countries have, I was going to say, changed hands. So yeah, okay, I guess that works. I came to football late, discovering when I was 17, playing for my college team, having moved to England aged 9. That is quite late, isn't it, I suppose, 17?
Yeah.
In the modern game.
Hmm.
My international home stadium is called Stade de Martyrs.
Stop. Lauren Robert?
It's not Lauren Robert.
You've got to say your name. Then. That wouldn't have counted, Jim. There'd have been a steward's inquiry there.
It would have been bad. Yeah, sorry.
I didn't know who that was.
Well, I can kind of tell you about your voices. I played for multiple teams in England, including two for the teams the Ramblers support: Greece, Qatar, Cyprus, and Turkey. That's a big clue.
Got nothing.
This is interesting, this one. This
yeah,
is very
it's
interesting.
A good one. It's a good one. I missed some league games as I contracted malaria on international duty.
Luke, so the only player I can think of that played for my team, assuming it is one of my teams, who's contracted malaria is Yakubu.
He's not a winger.
It's not Yakubu. It's not Yakubu.
I know he's not a winger, Marcus, but I also know Pete Donaldson, so I thought it was worth
fair.
A guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Fair, I believe fair, yeah. I believe he contracted it when he wasn't at your club.
All right, Marcus.
I am generally... Go on, Marcus.
Benjani.
It's not Benjani. I'm generally known only by my family name.
Oh, Jim.
Go on, Jim.
Is it Trezor Lualua?
It is Trezor Lamana. Yes. Lua. Congratulations, Jim. Fantastic at work. I injured myself celebrating a goal in typical gymnastic style against Arsenal in 2006. Take that. And I started my career at Colchester United. Went to Newcastle, Portsmouth before netting 19 goals before going overseas. And my cousin is Yannick Balassi. So thank you very much for getting involved. Mark Busby on that one. I always liked that player. I thought he was decent.
He's still playing. He's still playing for like a non-league team in Peterborough. I'll suggest this says more about me than anything else, but I don't know if I consider Lualua to be a winger. I think he's more of a striker, but I can see that he played in that position.
He was definitely a winger. He played all of his time at Newcastle on the wing. It's not my fault Portsmouth managers don't know what they're doing.
Well, he scored against Bobby Robson's Newcastle, thank you very much. Yeah, and he somersaulted right in front
he'd
of him.
He'd hurt them.
He'd hurt us.
He's hurt us. Yeah. He's hurt us there. Yeah.
That was the point where Portsmouth had Papa Bouba Diop, Benjani Muwariwari and Trezor Lamanu Lualua all in the same team. It's magnificent. It was a magnificent thing to listen to.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, there we are, ladies and gentlemen. We've reached the end of the preview show. A little reminder before we go that we shall be watching Hot Shot for Pete's Film Club on Monday, which features a Pelé. So it should be pretty average, you would think.
Yeah. Mm. Will it reach the heights of his... do you think his film career in this case will reach the heights of his World Cup winning career? At 17, winning the FA, winning the World Cup. Do you think this will creatively reach those levels?
It be more like his Viagra advert where he says,
I would.
In this film, the plot seems to be, I won't, so...
Yes.
Spoiler. Tune in to find out.
Yeah, he turned his hair into diamonds for a time, isn't he? There really is nothing Pelé won't do for money, it would seem. So I'm looking forward to this.
What I like about that is he's been involved in so many different kind of licensing deals, all Pelé, and he's made a hell of a lot of money off what can only be described as one of the greatest careers that we will ever experience as football fans. As the Football Ramble 4 that we're doing it 10 years ago, we are obsessed with the fact that he turned his hair into diamonds. Out of all of the commercial opportunities he's had in his life, turning your hair into diamonds was just one step too far, I think, Football Ramble Daily. Yeah.
But I think, though, if hair can be turned into diamonds, like, shouldn't we all be doing it?
Do it.
Yeah,
well, it would take a lot of pressure, I think. I mean, not with my hair, it's very thin. You'd have to sort of probably... bulk it out with a bit of beard and possibly pubic hair. So there you go.
It's only a matter of time before he's taking it there.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening.
Can you turn your beard into diamonds?
He mentioned pubic
carbon,
hair. We've
it?
Got to go. We've got to go. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. All right, that's enough. All right. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to the preview show on Football Ramble Daily, sponsored by Betway. I am back with Jonathan Wilson tomorrow. We are discussing with Gavram Jouan, BBC Sports Gavram Jouan, the Champions League final, Barcelona 2, Arsenal 1. Get your chops around that. Some lovely old chat there. Even if you're an Arsenal fan, I think you'll still enjoy it. So that should be quite good. And a reminder, of course, of the good stuff happening on Patreon. Luke, give us another reminder quickly.
Yeah, so sign up before 5 a.m. on Monday for a chance to win a great Toshiba TV. It's patreon.com/footballrambledaily.
Lovely old job. Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Petey.
Goodbye, everyone.
It's goodbye from me, everybody. Stay safe.
This was a Stakhanov production.